Welcome in to Locked On Knicks. Big news today, because there just keeps being big news every single day. Julius Randle has signed an extension to continue being part of the Knicks for a long time, Gavin.
Yeah, Alex, a four-year contract worth up to $117 million will give you all the specifics on the deal and what this means for the Knicks going forward, both in terms of the team that they'll put together this season and in the future. All that and more right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
All right, welcome in to Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf. I'm editor-in-chief of Knicks site The Strickland, which you can find at thestrick.land. He is Gavin Shaw, your favorite play-by-play man out there. And we are talking today about Julius Randle. Just when we think the news cycle has died, Julius Randle surprises all of us and takes maybe one of the most team-friendly extensions I've seen in the modern NBA. I mean, I don't know. I can remember a day a number of years ago when, not that long ago, like 5-6 years ago, when Carmelo Anthony took let go of his second year raises. So he didn't take a raise from year one to year two on his contract, on his max contract, to be clear. And we looked at that as like a huge, huge win. Julius Randle literally just took a contract that is worth, in some ways, almost half of the amount of money that he could have gotten by waiting until next summer. As we said in the open, he accepts a four-year, $117 million extension, or worth up to as much as $117 million. It's around $106 million base compensation, and then there are bonuses that he can hit that would potentially make it worth more. As a year-by-year breakdown, Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic put out a nice graphic that showed it. He will still make his roughly $20 million this season on his current deal. And then this extension tacks four more years onto that contract, which will pay him approximately $24 million in the first year, about $25.5 million in the second year, about $27.5 million in the third year, and about $29.5 million in the fourth and final year of the extension. There was a world. I went back and referenced an article that Jeremy Cohen of The Strickland wrote about, you know, Randle's exact contract situation here and all the different options he could have taken. There was a world where he could have signed a five-year max deal next summer that would have paid him over $200 million, starting at about $34.5 million in the first season in 2022-23. So just on that first year alone, Randle took almost a $10 million pay cut. Gavin, I don't know. I'm not quite sure where to start as far as I think mainly the part I think we should start at is the just what this means for what the Knicks have built so far. I mean, this is, make no mistake, $106 million. That's enough that Julius and his wife and his two kids, maybe they'll have more kids in the future. Like, none of them are ever going to have to worry about anything for the rest of their lives. $100 million is an astronomical sum of money to who an average human being, and that, you know, they're not going to have to worry about a thing, even living in New York City where living is so expensive. But he passed up potentially $100 million to stick with the Knicks. I mean, what does this mean for this culture that the Knicks are building right now, that Randle was willing to turn down that much extra money to keep this team flexible going forward to build a winner around him, which is just not something that you see that often in the NBA anymore.
Well, and to your point, Alex, I mean, it's not only something that you don't see often. When you do see it, it's because the team recently won the championship or made the finals or is a perennial contender. You typically don't see it when a team has been largely awful for 20 years and then has one season where they get the four seed and lose in the first round. And that gives you an idea of the amount of faith Julius Randle has in what's happening in New York. And that just has to be extraordinarily encouraging for everyone. It's trust in Leon Rose. It's trust in Brock Aller. It's trust in Tom Thibodeau. It's trust in Johnny Bryant. It's trust in every single member of this organization. Heck, it's a lot of trust in RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley and Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker. I don't think the timing of this deal is a mistake. I mean, I'm sure there are cap machinations that made it so this could only be agreed upon once the Knicks had done everything else they were going to do in the draft and free agency. But I do think an element of it, and Randle placing that amount of trust in the Knicks, is the fact that Walker and Fournier are here, and he has talent around him, and he sees that he's, at least for the foreseeable future, assuming those guys can stay relatively healthy, he's not going to have to deal with something in a playoff series like he did against the Hawks, where the entire defense is geared up against him. He's seeing that RJ Barrett is ready to make a step. He's seeing that Emmanuel Quickley is ready to make another step. He has faith that guys like Deuce McBride and Quentin Grimes will eventually be solid contributors on this team, that Mitchell Robinson has his back defensively. He loves what the Knicks are building, and he so clearly loves playing in New York. A guy who, once fans were allowed into the Garden, was getting MVP chance. A guy who got MVP votes this season. He's internalized that. He's embodied everything that the Knicks are trying to build from a culture perspective. And it's a pretty amazing thing to see. We're from a year ago. We, and specifically I, were ready to throw this guy out and say, we get it. He can put up numbers. He is never going to contribute to winning in New York. He's never going to really be a useful piece for when the Knicks are eventually good, if that time ever comes. And you fast forward, I mean, less than a year later, and from a calendar perspective, it's pretty incredible how far we've come. And just to see what he values, and that's winning. And that's not a judgment. I wouldn't blame – look, in his shoes, I would be like, I'm going to try and make the maximum amount of money for myself. Like, I've put in this blood and sweat equity to have earned that right. And he did. He worked his ass off to get to this point. And for him to – despite doing that, I mean, I don't want to say turn down the fruits of his labor, because to your point, this is still a very, very good contract. But just to put it in perspective, Alex, this is the least amount of money any player on a non-rookie contract who's made an All-NBA team in the past three seasons has taken, with the exception of guys who were bought out, Blake Griffin and Kemba Walker. So he's absolutely accepting a giant, giant discount to allow the Knicks the flexibility to, again, build a winner around him and do what he clearly wants to do, which is become a legend in New York. And the guys who are legends in New York in our lifetime haven't necessarily been so because they've won big. They've been so because they were so invested in the team, in the culture of the city, gave everything they had, and were great players. And Randle checks all those boxes, and I think he's well on his way.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't mean to, you know, I threw, I guess you could call it almost like a jab at the beginning. I never faulted Melo for trying to get every dime that he could, but that was a guy that, I mean, through every stage of his career was, you know, never willing to take a discount. And I think we saw the effect that that had on the Knicks and their ability to build a team around him for a number of years there. And, you know, maybe that's also partly on the front office. Like, you should game plan for having max players on your roster at some point if you want to be good, and then learn how to build around them. Look at, like, the Lakers, for example. I mean, they have LeBron on a huge max contract, Anthony Davis on a huge max contract. They managed to still trade for Russell Westbrook, who's also on a basically max contract, and then still managed to fill that roster out around them. And, they look like they could be title contenders again this year. So, like, that's a thing that you do when your team is good. But, there have been moments, or there were moments for Melo to sort of take, like, a little less, which would have given the Knicks like a good amount more, you know, flexibility, and would have allowed them to build a better team around him. And he never did it. And then we sort of saw the results play out, and it's fine. We got that one really fun season out of it. And, you know, a lot of people really loved his tenure here, but we're now seeing with Randall, I mean, this is like, again, it's basically, you just mentioned the numbers there of that he's the lowest paid player of anyone to make an all NBA team in the last 3 years, short of the two buyout guys, and one of whom is on the Knicks now. It's really crazy. I mean, the NBA is not a pay cut league. You know, it's typically you see that sort of stuff more in the NFL and whatever, like, you know, famously Tom Brady with the Patriots used to take pay cuts all the time so that they could keep winning championships. But that also goes back to your point of, you know, usually this is something you see with championship caliber players, but we now even see in the NBA, like even guys that are on championship caliber teams or that have won championships recently, like the Steph Currys of the world, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, you know, those guys that were on the Warriors, LeBron, who, you know, is now in the Lakers. I mean, these guys don't take pay cuts, like at a certain point. And it was mostly, I think, like many things, dictated by LeBron, where when he went to the Lakers and also when he went to the Cavs, actually, he made a point of saying, like, I'm not taking discounts anymore. I'm if I can get this amount of money, I'm getting that amount of money, and you figure out how to build a championship team around me. And that's sort of been like the mantra in the NBA since then. And so this is like, I don't know, it's really exciting to me in the sense of it speaks to this. They've managed that Leon Rose and this front office have built such a crazy culture here. And I know that that's like such a corny buzzword that gets thrown around. And we used to like clown people for saying it about the Nets and whatever. But like this is literally what culture looks like. Like a guy taking $10 million a season less because he likes what the front office is doing so much and believes in them so much to build a good team that he says, I will take significantly less money because I trust you guys to do something good with that extra $10 million that I'm giving you by not taking it on my contract. And maybe it's a topic for next segment, but I mean, this is going to give the Knicks so much flexibility going forward as far as, you know, more cap space to work with as soon as next offseason and then beyond. But Gavin, I think maybe if people want to bet on the Knicks to do better than expected again this year, which I'm currently feeling really good about that, where should they go if they want to bet on the Knicks right now?
Well, Alex, there's only one place they possibly could go, and that's Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at Bet Online. You can get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC/MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their run to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if you use our promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, we are back on Locked On Knicks and still talking Julius Randle and that new contract. And I mean, you talk about the unselfishness and what it opens up for the Knicks. And to me, that's obviously the most exciting part about all this. It's that Julius has the understanding that, and I find this so interesting with NBA players just in general, like how much is not only winning worth to you, but comfort on the court and the lack of stress in your life that comes from being a good team and playing with guys that are complementary and guys that accentuate your skill set. Because I know just from playing pickup basketball throughout my life, as I'm sure everyone listening knows, basketball is so much more fun when you play with other people who are either better than you or just good enough to make the game easy for you. And it's fascinating when you'll see a star go to a situation that is far from ideal, but they're just offered all the money in the world. So they're saying, you know what, screw it. I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to take this money. And then maybe in a few years, I can end up on a different team in a better situation. Versus guys that, I mean, even like, maybe this is a bad example because he was coming off an injury, but Victor Oladipo right now just took the minimum with Miami. And I'd be kind of shocked if there wasn't another team in the NBA that was offering Victor Oladipo more than the minimum, even with all the injury issues he's had over the last couple of years and not being the same guy that he was. I mean, this is still a dude that's, what, 3 years removed now from being one of the top 15 players in the NBA. And yet he saw a chance in Miami to, I mean, one, rehabilitate his value, but two, play with all these guys that would genuinely complement his game and make him better. And to me, that's the, when we talk about culture and all this stuff, to some extent, it's selfless in that he's doing this so the team can win, but he's also making a decision that I will be happier if this team wins. And I know to do that, we ultimately have to get someone better than me. And it's just, it's an interesting point of self-reflection. And to me, Alex, when you were talking about Melo, that's what I was thinking. The whole logic of Melo, like not that he didn't want great guys around him, but his thought process was always, I'm good enough to be the number one guy on a championship team. And whether that was true or not, we've debated on this podcast in the past. Maybe there were contexts like something analogous to the 2011 Dallas Mavericks where Melo could have been the best guy on a title team. He was ultimately wrong about that because it never happened. At this point in his career, it's not going to happen. But it's just an interesting amount of self-awareness with Julius Randle. But Alex, I want to get into the more practical side of this. What is Randle taking this discount actually open up for the Knicks next summer and then especially in two summers from now?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing, obviously, is that cap savings, right? I mean, he could have been making in excess of, you know, $30 million per season starting as soon as not this coming year, but the year after, you know, the 2022 to 23 season. And even just going into next offseason, I mean, there's Bradley Beal is going to be a free agent, which we've mentioned before. Zach LaVine will be a free agent as well. No more Steph Curry. That dream is dead. Womp womp. But, you know, there will be at least a couple of, you know, kind of headliner free agents next year. If the Knicks should find themselves in the mix for any of those guys, the big thing now is Randle signing for a deal that starts at like $24 million means that he signed for less than what his cap hold would have even been. His cap hold, I forget the number off the top of my head and I couldn't find it anywhere. And I also don't feel like doing the math, but I know that it was in excess of $30 million because with what his previous contract was, plus like cap holds are very much based off of expected value. And I believe that making an all NBA team puts you in the max category, or like making an all NBA team within the last couple years, et cetera, plus, you know, like all-star appearances, stuff like that factors into your cap hold, if I'm not mistaken. And his cap hold would have been probably in excess of $30 million. The Knicks wouldn't have been able to just like renounce that. They would have had to keep that on the books. Now they have $10 million less coming in next offseason because of Randle taking this pay cut now rather than waiting until even next offseason to sign the contract when free agency started. And then on top of it, like, you know, this now, along with the news that the Knicks have all of the players that they signed this offseason on player options, or sorry, team options for the third seasons, that means that if a situation arose next summer where, say, like Bradley Beal becomes available to the Knicks and says, I want to join up with Julius Randle, you know, it'll be me, Randle, RJ, and Kemba, which that's a mouthwatering thought right there, but along with Mitchell Robinson at center. That would be a pretty damn good team, along with still having Fournier on the team. But if that should come up, the Knicks could probably pretty easily create that space by just attaching some light assets to like the now expiring contracts of Derrick Rose, Nerlens Noel, Alec Burks, if they have to clear the space to go after a big free agent like that, because Randle took this pay cut and is only making like not even a quarter of the cap. It would be closer to, let's put it this way, it would be close. His new number is closer to a fifth of the cap than it is a quarter of the cap. And, you know, the maximum contract you can sign typically is anywhere from 30 to 35% of the cap. So he really, I mean, a 5 to 10% hit on what his total cap allotment could be is a huge, huge win for the Knicks, for a guy who is literally just entering his prime right now. Now we'll see. I mean, we've talked about this already with him, you know, in various pods since the season ended. Maybe there's some regression coming. Maybe there's not. I don't know. But if there is regression coming, that's still fine because he's still, I mean, I had someone on Twitter I saw being like, oh, we'll see if it's a steal or not. No, it's a steal no matter what. I mean, if he plays at, let's just say, 85 to 90% of the level that he did last year, let's say that the shooting percentages take a dip because of, you know, the crowds returning, which they will for everybody, to be clear. Like, shooting was, I think, pretty well up around the league this year as far as percentages go. And, you know, it had to do with the empty building. So it's not just going to affect Randall. That'll affect everybody around the league. But, you know, let's say the numbers go down because of that a little bit. And, you know, maybe with Kemba on the team, like, you know, I think in many ways it could help Randall. But maybe, it takes him a little time to adjust, to having to have less of the playmaking load on his plate and all that stuff. And, you know, that leads to some regression. No matter what, if he plays like 90% or 85% of the player he played as this past year, this contract is a steal now. Like, he's automatically locked into a contract that is below market value for a player of his caliber doing the things that he was doing this year. I mean, it shouldn't be forgotten, and maybe it has been by some fans with short memories, but it should not be forgotten that he was in a class with the numbers that he put up this year of himself and Nikola Jokic, who won MVP. Like, they're the only guys that put up that 2010 and six.
Yeah, 24, 10 and six. Yeah.
24, 10 and six. Yeah. They're the only guys that put up those numbers this year. Or I think even if you narrowed it down to 20, 10 and six, I don't think anybody You're else right. did it. But either way, I mean, class by himself. So this deal is amazing. It's going to give them so much flexibility going forward. And I'm really excited to see what the Knicks are able to do with this newfound flexibility, because I think we've already seen this year, this summer, that they've done a lot of really good things with, it's not to say they had a minimum amount of flexibility, but they really maximized the flexibility that was offered to them during this offseason, I think. But I'm going to take a moment to just let everybody know that today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar out there. And did you know they have so many delicious flavors? By my count, they have 10. And if you talk to Built Bar fans, they're very passionate about their favorites, which stop me if you've heard this one before. I love coconut and cookies and cream, my two favorite flavors. I know coconut's polarizing, but I love a good Mounds bar or an Almond Joy. And Built Bars taste surprisingly similar to a Mounds bar, with the wonderful coconut flavor coated all the way around in chocolate. Tastes just like you're eating a candy bar. Same deal with cookies and cream. It's almost like if you took a Hershey's cookies and cream bar, made it chewy, coated it in chocolate all around it. It's just a fantastic tasting bar. But the best part is they're healthy too. Every Built Bar has 17 to 18 grams of protein, just 130 to 180 calories, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. So all the flavors are amazing, all very tasty, and they're all good for you as well, and give you the protein you need after a workout. Built Bar is also the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. So if you're watching them on the Olympics and wondering, wow, how do they find that extra gear? What protein pack snack are they eating? It's Built Bars. So get some for yourself. Go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. All right, and we're back talking Julius Randle's fantastic contract extension. But Gavin, we were talking about it during the break about whether maybe there's a chance that this contract could not work out as well. I know I literally just went on a spiel in the last segment saying, you know, there's pretty much no way that this could not work. Maybe it's a fun game to play devil's advocate, though, and say, is there a world where maybe Julius Randle can't live up to this contract? Or, like, what is his ceiling as a player now, given the huge strides that he took this year? Obviously, you know, if people don't know the stats off the top of their head, 24.1 points per game, 10.2 rebounds, 6 assists even, shot 45.6% from the field, 41.1% from three on 5.5 attempts per game, and 81.1% from the free throw line on 6 attempts per game. Pretty much all those numbers were career highs other than the overall field goal percentage. But given his offensive responsibility as like a wing and a mid-range maestro, that was sort of expected that the overall field goal percentage wouldn't be quite as high. when he's playing more like a wing than like a big like he has earlier in his career. But Gavin, you know, we've talked 5,000 times throughout the season, after the season, how amazing this year was for him. I mean, is there a world where maybe we just saw the best that Julius is ever going to be, and where this contract maybe like won't be quite as much of a steal going forward? Like, I don't know. If we're looking at his career trajectory, do you think that there are potentially more all-NBA teams in his future? Do you think maybe this was like a one and done? I certainly think it's reasonable to think he's probably got another all-star nod or two in him, if nothing else, but is that enough? Is that going to be enough? Like, I don't know. What do you think about that?
No, I think, well, here's the downside, right? It's that we still have such a small sample size of him being this type of player. I mean, abbreviated season. And before that, I said it time and time again, I didn't see him ever having success as a shooter, because even the best year of his career from 3-point range was that 34% or so season in New Orleans. Before that, he never shot over 30% from three. His first year as a Knick, he did not shoot over 30% from three. He was inefficient. And then we got into the playoffs last year, and we saw some of those same issues crop up in terms of him just being overwhelmed by the moment. And granted, Atlanta created a really good scheme around him, and I think Randall's lack of success was probably more of a product of his teammates than himself, but it was still scary to see on the biggest stage, hey, there's a way to solve this guy. And usually for the greatest players in the world, you can mitigate them a bit, but you very rarely say you can solve them. Where I'm not so worried about Randall is you go through NBA history, and even players that are in a different class of talent than he is, they all had their struggles, not necessarily in their first playoff series. And I shouldn't say all of them. Like look at someone like Luka Doncic, who's like never had a bad playoff game in his life, essentially. But a lot of these guys have had their issues in those first series. I think of someone like Kyle Lowry, who's a surefire Hall of Famer, and him and DeMar DeRozan, who's maybe a step down talent-wise, had all these massive, massive crap-their-pants kind of games in their initial playoff runs with Toronto, where you're just like, what is happening to these guys? And that's what the playoffs do to people. They break you down mentally, and until you get one under your belt, it's hard to account for just how much pressure that is and how it could affect someone's game. And if you're not right mentally, all the skill in the world isn't going to save you. So Julius got that experience under his belt. And I think the more important thing is something I noted earlier in the podcast. It's that any drop-off he has as a shooter, and I do think this is fair warning to all Knicks fans, there's going to be a drop-off, because the degree of difficulty on the shot-making he had last year and the rapid development from someone who was just flat-out not a good three-point shooter by NBA standards to someone who was an elite shot maker from three, and as the year went on, was mixing in threes off the dribble, around screens, every which way. There's going to be a fallout from that, not to mention the interior scoring that he has. He was just ridiculously accurate, especially in the first half of the year, on those little mid-range fadeaway jumpers that are the hardest shots in all of basketball. And yet, his field goal percentages, or at least his true shooting, I don't think will dramatically shift, because he's going to get easier looks around the basket because the Knicks added two elite shooters in Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier. Someone like RJ Barrett should be even more consistent as a shooter and is going to start hitting self-creation threes, which will open up all the more room for Julius Randle. And Emmanuel Quickley is going to play more. And Randle was a drastically more efficient player when Randle was on the court. When Quickley was on the court, and the Knicks were a drastically better team when Quickley was on the court. So you have all these factors that'll open up the floor for Julius, allow him to get to the rim, get free throws, and I think that'll mitigate any kind of drop-off he has as a shooter. And then the other thing is we saw him fall apart towards the end of the year, not completely, or at least until the playoff series, not completely. But I know, Alex, you pushed back on this at different times. I genuinely think he was exhausted from the minutes load the Knicks were asking him to play, which was the leading total in the entire NBA. And it wasn't just the minutes, it was the quality of the minutes. He had to do so much. You said it the other day, he was the Knicks' LeBron at different points this year, dictating every single aspect of the offense. Because if he wasn't going to do it at different points, no one else would. And that's just not true this year. Between Kemba Walker, with a full season of Derrick Rose, Evan Fournier can take the reins for points. Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett will be more ready to take control of the offense, at least for a couple of possessions here or there, it's just going to be so much less taxing on his body. And I think that will allow him to attack the rim with abandon. Instead of being someone in the second half of the year, he turned into a pure jump shooter. And that's not playing to his greatest strengths, because he is this big, physical, burly dude with nimble feet and a tight handle. I think we're going to see a Julius Randle that can fully leverage his new shooting next year and use it to become an all-around player and one who can do so sustainably. So I'm really excited about the future. I know this was supposed to be the devil's advocate segment, how this could go badly, but I think all the pitfalls we saw from him last year are mitigated by the way the Knicks have changed their roster going into this season.
Yeah, I think the ultimate lesson here is there is absolutely no way that this can go wrong. And, like, God forbid an injury or something. But other than that, I mean, yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Like, I think that the Knicks have done such a good job of making life easier for Randle on this new contract. And maybe that's why he signed it. You know what I mean? Like, he sees, okay, I have faith in this team and what they're doing and that they have my back to surround me with players that are going to make my life easier. Like, on top of it, I wonder if maybe, and I know this is freaking wild, you know, considering he like barely did this last year. I feel like I never saw Julius Randle as the role man in a pick and roll last year, but he was really good at that in New Orleans, like just a couple seasons ago. And it was like 92nd percentile or something as the role man. In the NBA when he was playing with the Pelicans with, you guessed it, Elfrid Payton as his point guard, which we now know how big of a detriment that is to a player as a role man from watching him with Mitch and Nerlens and everybody else for the last 2 years. So now that he has Kemba Walker on the team, I mean, maybe now that's an aspect of Julius's game that gets re-unlocked. And I mean, I don't use this lightly. I mean, there is Amari Stoudemire-esque potential, not necessarily for the explosion around the rim that Amari used to have, but for the fact that Amari used to be so dangerous in the pick and roll, in the fact that he could pop to the elbow and shoot like 65% from there, because that was just like his shot. He could roll to the rim and be dangerous there because that was an area that he was great in. And an aspect that Randle has that even Amari didn't have is that he can just float out to the three-point line, too, off of a pick. And, you know, if Kemba Walker collapses the defense, he could just find Randle for an easy catch-and-shoot three-pointer. So that's what the Kemba addition does. And, you know, again, this is like the Julius Randle contract podcast, but that's a huge thing that could potentially be re-added to Randle's game this year now that he has credible ball handlers around him, including, I mean, we shouldn't forget, too, Evan Fournier is a good ball handler. He can certainly run a quick pick-and-roll, like, He's a good passer for a two guard for sure, which we've seen like in the Olympics and everything as well, where he's been really tasked with like running their offense during that time for France, who's now going to be competing against the U.S. for a gold medal. And then, you know, you also still have RJ Barrett, who hopefully will have a year of development. And so, I mean, there's just so many possibilities for Randle on this roster now to get better based off the personnel, so that even if there is maybe a little bit of a regression in his shooting numbers for the same type of shots that he took last year, he probably won't have to take those same type of shots because everything should, in theory, be a lot easier for him this year. So I'm super excited. Again, you know, we tried to play devil's advocate, but it was impossible. I mean, there's so much to be excited about with Julius Randle sticking with this team for so long, especially on this team-friendly contract that he's on. And like, I'm so, so excited to see what this contract ends up holding for him as far as how much better the Knicks can get, how much better he can get, and everything else. So I'm ready for it. I'm sure you're ready for it. And I think that's probably as good a note as any to wrap things up on for this pod, unless you had any final points you wanted to add in.
No, I think you did a great job. Let's call it right there. That's it for this edition of Locked On Knicks. If you listen this long, I'll give you the reward. We have a great guest tomorrow. We'll be joined by Petey Webb to talk about the Knicks draft and a little bit on the Knicks free agency. We recorded that one before the Randle contract was signed, so we wanted to get out this separate pod. But look forward to that in your feeds sometime tomorrow. Until next time, for Alex Wolf, I'm Gavin Shaw. Peace out.